Flyers Daily with Jason Martinez.
All right, here we go. It is a brand new Flyers Daily. Today, Friday the 13th? Oh, we like Friday the 13th. Flyers Daily is always presented by Ticketmaster. Make more memories live. What's to not to like about Friday the 13th when you're a former goaltender, right here, and your name's Jason, right here. Friday the 13th. Enjoy it, everybody. Couple things real quick. We're going to continue our Flyers Exit Day interview series and have a conversation in this episode with Flyers defenseman Nick Seeler. I've been kind of moving the schedule around quite a bit, probably driving Flyers marketing and PR a little bit nuts because I'm really pivoting from my original schedule of the Flyers interview exit interview series. But there's reasons why I move them around. Obviously, we moved Tyson Forster up and Noah Cates up because they signed contracts. We had Travis Sanheim last week. Turns out it was on Travi Day, which was 6/11/2025. Travis Sanheim, number 6. Number 11, Travis Konecny. Flyers deem that Travi Day. Good job, Borny. That is really cool. We had Travis Sanheim on that day. That was just happenstance and luck. But today we have Nick Seeler. And I'll tell you the reason why I'm moving Nick Seeler up right now to start the episode. We're going to get to some emails. I'm going to start to clean out this email files in my computer and respond here on the podcast to a lot of the emails that have come in. And we're going to get to some in this episode. You're not going to hear a lot from me in this episode. We've got about 9 minutes of my conversation with Nick Seeler coming up. I don't have a ton of energy. I've been through an entire week this week, including today, of chemo pill and radiation, and it is causing me a good amount of fatigue. So I am tired. Right now I'm chilling, watching the cup final, Florida up 3-0 in the game after one period of play. And so we're going to get to some things, some emails, and the interview with Nick Seeler. And you go, well, what the heck's that have to do with moving Nick Seeler up? I'll just say this real quick as we start the episode. I got to thank a few people. Nick Seeler, we know his story of how he earned his way to the NHL and becoming an NHL player. A lot of people don't know Nick Seeler off the ice, and I understand that. We've gotten to know Nick a little bit here on Flyers Daily, but even beyond the conversations that I have with him, he has been incredibly kind to me through my cancer journey. I'm not going to go into full details of the things that he's done because he didn't do it for it to be public. But he's been incredibly compassionate, kind. He is a man who follows his religion and his faith. So we're going to celebrate that on this episode. Nick Seeler, one of those guys that I think it's really important you have on a team, because in sports, a lot of times you need a guy on your team that is your moral compass. And in sports, we tend to lose our moral compass at times. We tend to talk a big game when it comes to morality of sport, morality of life, and the players we want and cheer for, but we don't hold to that morality in times of desperation or in times when you go, well, I'm willing to overlook it because this player is really good. Nick Seeler is a guy that brings a moral compass to a team, and I do think that's important. Now, when I was younger, I wouldn't have thought that was important. I wouldn't even have thought about it, to be honest with you. And obviously with the journey I'm on, I'm facing some things in my mortality and I have to look at things a little bit differently. And I'm doing that. And it's causing me to be more open-minded, introspective, and lean on my faith, all of those things to understand why I'm going through what I'm going through. But as I sit here, 53 years of age, graying in my beard, I do think those things, like having a moral compass in a team sport like hockey, is important. I really do. It's why I also think having a guy like, you know, Alexander Barkov is important. People look at his offensive numbers in the finals and they say, he hasn't really done much offensively, but it's a cumulative sport. What he's done is he's kept McDavid and Draisaitl under control, not putting up numbers against, and by proxy, he's a net positive player, because he's hindering them from scoring when they would normally score. And even though he is not putting up points, he's preventing the other team from putting up points. I think sometimes we lose sight of that part of it. But Nick Seeler will have our Flyers exit day interview coming up in just a couple of minutes. Great conversation with Seals. And I think you guys will find it enjoyable. We had a really good conversation on Wednesday with Travis Sanheim. Really lets you kind of behind the curtain of the man behind the player and how the man started as a boy, became a man, became the player. Nick Seeler's journey is just equally as great to hear about from the source himself, him. So we'll hear from him in just a minute. I got to send out thanks, but I don't know to who. So I got this tweet yesterday morning when I got up from a guy, and he said, hey, your name made it on to the jerseys of the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs. It's their Strikeout for Cancer jerseys. And apparently names were submitted. Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs tweeted out a full list of the names featured on the jerseys. There were hundreds of submissions, so names were randomly generated. Here's a look at the jerseys. They're beautiful with the purple. And then you see the names kind of written all over these jerseys. And then in the subsequent picture, there's a list of the names, starting with Tara Curtin and a bunch of people here. And then right here in column number two, under Joe Costello and Susan Rice, is yours truly, Jason Martinez. I don't know who submitted me. I don't know who submitted my name. I sent a note to John Brazier, who's a buddy of mine. I actually played beer league with Brazier from the Phillies. And he's going to do some digging with me because I want to thank the person. So if you're the person that sent in for my name to be on the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs Strikeout for Cancer jerseys, thank you. That's very touching, very meaningful. And I greatly appreciate it. So thanks a lot. I really do appreciate it. Let's get to a couple of emails before we get to Nick Seeler. We've got to start to clean out this email bin. It's overflowing, and I need to get to these. And this first one actually came just yesterday. And it comes from, let me see what the name is. The email sometimes doesn't match the name. It's Vic. He says, hey, Jason, great to hear your voice nearly every day, and you're never far from we listeners' thoughts. I know fans will be fans, and everyone has an opinion. So I want to respond to some negativity out there, in this case, in regards to number 74. Of course, that's Owen Tippett. He said, a few things I've learned with the help of Hockey Reference. Hockey Reference is a good site. He said, talking power play is challenging in regards to the Flyers, since it's been just so bad. He said, but I found this interesting. Tippett is second on the Flyers team in power play scoring over the past four seasons, behind only Travis Konecny. This while he only played about 20 games in the four seasons ago, 21-22 season since he arrived, and had zero power play goals in 24-25, where for some reason Rocky Thompson removed him from power play number ones. Torts didn't step in to correct this move, and that said, he was still third on the roster in power play assists this past season. He said, I think everyone would agree Tippett didn't meet hopes or expectations this past year, but here are a few additional numbers regarding the 24-25 season. On the roster, he was fourth in goals, fifth in assists, third in power play assists, fourth in hits, second in takeaways. He says, does that sound like a one-way player? And this while being an underutilized 11th in team average time on ice, lack of PP1 time, a big drag on time on ice. He said, NHL GMs scour the hockey world for heavy scoring wingers who can leave fans slack-jawed with their high skill goals. I presume Danny, as a former player, recognizes this in Tippett. Perfect? Of course not. But when I see posts like Tippett and our round one 22nd draft pick for Marco Rossi or straight trade for Bowen Byram, I shudder. High hopes that the new staff can utilize him more effectively and unlock that confidence you so often rightly talk about. Best wishes to you and yours, Jason. Vic, great email. And he's one of the guys that I'm really interested to see how he responds to Rick Tocchet. I don't know that the message will be a lot different from Rick Tocchet or John Tortorella to Rick Tocchet to Owen Tippett, but it may be the message being delivered from a different set of lips or a different disposition changes things. Again, I've talked about it a ton. If I was coaching Owen Tippett, and I never will be, and I say it to him all the time, you guys hear it when I say it when he comes on Flyers Daily, it doesn't matter how good he is. I'd like to see him recognize how good he is and play with a little bit more of that bite and a little bit more of that swagger, confidence. I'd like to add a little cockiness to him. He is a very humble, laid back, good person. But I'd like to see that when that helmet goes on and that jersey goes on, I'd like to see a little cockiness, a little confidence. And you know what? When I'm out here on the ice, I'm going to dictate the terms. We see it when he's confident. We see it when he's not, that he doesn't have that when he's not confident. So that's an element. He'd be one of the guys that I'll be really intrigued to see this year. And like Vic said, you're right. You're looking for big power players that can skate like the wind. There's very few of the guys that are, have the build, strength, body type of Owen Tippett, but can skate like that. He's got these tools. They're all there. I think that sometimes when he's not going well, it tends to dip maybe his hockey IQ in some ways where he doesn't take the smartest attempts, shot attempts. But if he can just be a player that plays in the offensive zone more, plays off the rush more, and can add a little bit of cockiness, confidence, and some success, he can ride that through a year. And I think there's absolutely a 30 or 35 goal scorer in this player. There absolutely is. But it's incumbent upon him to let, like Bill says, Bill Meltzer, lessen those periods when it's not going well from 12 games to 6 or 7 games and know how good of a player and how skilled you are. That's paramount. This email comes from Judah. Says, hi, Jason. Before I get to my question, I want to say a quick thank you. I live abroad 7 hours ahead and have gotten used to listening to your podcast when I wake up, which is about 15 minutes after you release it. Then my father and I discuss the podcast during our phone calls, and I'm very much looking forward to the next year when, God willing, you'll be back to podcasting every day. Stay strong. I will be back. 7 hours ahead. I release the audio version at 11:55 every night, the day before the podcast. So like this podcast became available last night at 11:55 Eastern. Why 11:55? Because that's the last allotted time I can get it on just before midnight, where I upload it. And then it appears on YouTube usually about 12:15 or 12:30. Why do I upload it that early? Because it's a daily podcast and it's people like Judah. I don't know when you wake up. Some people wake up at 3 in the morning. Some wake up at midnight. Some wake up at 6 in the morning. Some wake up at 10 a.m. I don't know when you wake up. So I just know that when you wake up, whenever you wake up, it needs to be there. So that's why I upload it when I upload it. Judah says, I have two questions, draft questions. There's no end to coverage about who might be available at number 6. What about the other first round picks? Flyers, what positions are deep? What do the Flyers need in the organization from those spots other than a 6'5", 1C? yeah, when we get into 22 and 31 or 32, I'm not the guy to ask these questions to. I would refer you to the Craig Buttons, to Hockey Hot Stove with Bill Meltzer, to the experts on the draft. I'm not a draft expert. I feel like I have an idea of what they need from an organizational standpoint. I still think they need some size on the left side, the left wing. I think you always, in every draft, you should take a goalie. Always. Not in the first round. In the second, you have 4 second round picks. Maybe take one in the second round. Does that mean I don't like Carson Bjarnason or Igor Zavragin or any of the no, it doesn't mean that. But you could always have depth there. That's always good. You need centers, obviously. You draft centers, and you know, when you're getting later in the draft, later in the first round, centers that play in the OHL or in the Sweden or whatever league it is, you can move to the wing too. So you get a lot of versatility with those forward picks. I think in the first round, pretty much where the Flyers are right now, you just take the best player that you have on your board at that place with those 3 first round picks. I don't think they're going to use all those first round picks. I think one will be used in some kind of deal. His second question, Judah says, unlike the NBA, the NFL, hockey players have lots of different routes to the NFL. Some are abroad, some in juniors, college. Gavin McKenna going to Penn State. How's that smell? How does that affect the draft strategies and player rights? For example, can the Flyers stagger when all these draft picks become RFA, UFA by taking players who have different routes to the NHL? You can, and you have to. That's why I don't think it would be prudent to draft 3 players this year all on the same trajectory. You can't have a team, like people say, trade all the veterans, play the kids, and then you have all these kids and they all come up for UFA status at the same time, you're screwed if you do that. You have to stagger the ages and arc of a player's career through your lineup. You have to have players going into ELCs, coming off ELCs, going into RFA arbitration status. You have to have players going from RFA to UFA. You have UFAs coming in from other teams. And it's this cycle that has to keep feeding itself. That's what the good teams do. That's what Florida has done. That's what Tampa did. That's what Edmonton has done, albeit with a lot of lottery luck over a lot of years and a long time to get there. But yeah, you got to have a staggered age of players on your roster, or it just won't work. If you have everybody coming up for free agency at the same time and you're a good team, you just can't do it. You can't, you're not going to be able to meet the demands in a hard salary cap league. It just won't work. Let's get to one more here. I know this one's been sitting around for a little bit from Jeff Kirsch. Hey, Jason, first, so glad to hear that the medical news you received last week is positive. You sent this to me a couple weeks ago. And thanks for your continued transparency. There is no doubt you're going to win this battle. And I love how much support the community has galvanized your fighting spirit. The community, you guys are friggin' awesome. The amount that you help me, and you don't even know, is immeasurable. So I continue to be enthralled, humbled, and very thankful. Jeff says, while I know we're all looking ahead to the Rick Tocchet era, I have two last questions for you and Billy. This was for me and Bill Meltzer, but I'll take them on here. He said, regarding John Tortorella. He said, first, since he hasn't spoken publicly, what do you guys think was the catalyst for him seemingly lose his patience with the rebuild, the losing, etc.? Looking back on that night in Toronto, he said, I feel that the initial takes of, quote, he tried to get himself fired were absolutely accurate. He signed up for 4 years and knew it was unlikely they'd make the playoffs in at least the first 3 years, hence my question. He's got a second question, which we'll get to. I don't believe John Tortorella for 1 second went out there with the intent to get himself fired. I don't buy that. I don't believe that for a minute. Torts was the guy in the beginning of his tenure and through the first 2 years that said, we can't fall in love with players. We got to stick to the plan. We can't cut corners. We can't try and move too fast. We got to be patient, and we got to find out who's who and what's what and who's a part of this and who's not. And then all of a sudden that did seem to change. I think part of it for Torts was he was pacing himself in the beginning, could handle that part of it. I think year two helped Torts because there was a team that played themselves into a playoff position, played themselves as a playoff team, then played their way right out of it at the end of the year. That helped. And then this year, when they didn't meet the expectation of the year prior and there was further subtractions coming and he knew it was going to get worse, it just wore him down. It wore him down. He's a guy that the losing will eventually wear him down. And it did. But I don't think there was any intent going out and saying what he said with the purpose of getting himself fired. I don't believe that. Secondly, he says, Jeff, he says, what's your sense on why Torts never took to Couturier, to Coots? He said, have you said that player has always been a, quote, coach's dream? So it's particularly curious that Torts named him captain and then treated him like crap, to put it politely. Thanks as always, Jeff. It's a good question. And It's hard to know the reality of the situation unless we're going to get it from one of the horse's mouths, either from John Tortorella or from Sean Couturier. I think there was a lot of respect there for Couturier. You know, and towards his first year here, Couturier didn't play. And Torts would say he was a pain in the butt because he always wanted to get in the lineup. And they decided to hold him back when he was getting really close at the end of year one of John Tortorella. Then he came in and things seemed to be off and rolling in a good direction. And then Cooch struggled in the second half of the season prior to this last one. There was the scratching, obviously, after he was named captain. It's hard to know. It's hard to know the personality clashes. Torts, a lot of times, will get into a player's kitchen to invoke a reaction, to start a process with him. And that process begins with poking the bear poking back, and then the process evolving. I don't know if the poking of the bear if the player poked back right away. I don't know. I don't know the dynamic or timeline of how things developed in their relationship. But clearly, they weren't on the same page, clearly. And Couturier is a guy that, generally speaking, has been throughout his career one of those guys you love coaching because he's like a coach on the ice because he thinks the game at a very high level. And he's a player that fellow players really respect for the way he carries himself, the way he plays. And, you know, coaches like having a guy like that. He can be a very good conduit for a coach, and he may be a very big conduit for Rick Tocchet. Again, like Tippett, a guy that I'm really intrigued to see by the message coming from a different set of lips and a different messenger. We'll see how that plays out. All right, let's get to our Flyers exit day conversation. This time it is Flyers defenseman Nick Seeler. Great conversation with Seals as always. So enjoy this one. Nick Seeler on Flyers exit day. It is Flyers Daily. Our summer exit day interview series continues with a conversation with Flyers defenseman Nick Seeler, a guy that I'm incredibly fond of on and off the ice. The way you attack things on and off the ice as a person and a hockey player. How are you?
Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, I'm doing
quite the preamble.
Yeah, right? Thank you.
You weren't expecting that. Maybe caught you off guard a little bit.
Yeah.
As you decompress, and we're talking the day after the last game. It's almost unfair to ask this question right now. What goes through your mind? What's the emotions you're feeling?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we didn't end up where we wanted to this year. But, you know, there's a lot of positives also coming out of this year. I think that's what we have to look towards in this summer. And, you know, guys like Bobby Brink and Tyson Forrester and the steps that they took this year and that line with Cates and Bobby and Tyson. You know, Motvi, obviously.
Jamie
had a really good year and just his growth and he was able to stay healthy and so that was all positives going into next year. And I think, you know, one thing that's always constant with our group is our togetherness and you know, always play for the guy next to you, type of teammates. And that's something that you can always rely on.
One of the things with the finish of the season, you guys knew you weren't going to the playoffs for a pretty determined amount of time. But the way you guys finished the season with the integrity with which you approach those games, that didn't mean much, frankly. But the way you guys played the game honestly over that final stretch of the season, and you were cited specifically by Travis Konecny when I was in my conversation going, how am I going to go out there and not play like that when we have a guy like Nick Seeler who's going out there and blocking shots in unpadded areas and playing the game like it's going to be his last every game? I have to, because of the way he is doing that. That's just the way you are.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, I mean, I think that's something that is in me. I just, I don't know how to play any other way. It doesn't really matter, you know, that we were where we were in the standings. I think I'm always gonna play the same way. Yep, just compete and competitiveness, and I think we have a lot of guys like that, and TK as well. But you know what? I think when you put on that Flyers jersey, that's an honor to put that on, and you have to play the right way. It doesn't matter if you're, you know, 9 games left in the season, not making the playoffs. There's something to play for always, and whether that's pride in that uniform or the guys sitting next to you, I think it's really important. And I think we did a good job those last 9 games. I think we stuck together and there was, you know, a few bumps along the way, but I think we played really well.
Yeah, and played honest.
Yeah,
And with integrity. To finish it out with integrity, I think is really important. Do you realize how important that – there's a lot of young players here. There's going to be some more too. How important that is for those players to see that and get that earlier in their career?
I think it is, and I think that's something that I can lead with. You know, maybe not always being the vocal leader, but I think I can lead by example on the ice, and if I can show them, you know, the, you know, a few things here and there, the right way to play and compete and play for the guy next to you, I think that's beneficial moving forward for us.
When did that become part of your identity as a hockey player? I don't think it's a decision with you anymore. I think it's ingrained. I don't think you decide, okay, I'm going to go out and be that guy. I think you're just that guy. But when did that happen for you?
I think it's...
You aren't born with it.
Yeah, right. I think it's something as just my competitiveness growing up. And I think it's pretty much always been there in my career. And something that I've had to do to be successful, especially in this league, is just my compete level and play an honest game. And so that's something that I can control is how I approach each and every shift, and that won't change. So,
yeah, that's one thing. I don't think any coach that deploys you ever worries about. I know what I'm getting with Nick Seeler. I know he's a gamer. He's going to go out there and compete no matter what the situation is. As you go into this offseason, disappointing year, obviously, from a record standpoint, but maybe now an exciting time is about to begin with, in a rebuild, there are stages to it. There's the subtraction stage, which we've seen, and that's difficult because you lose friends and you lose talent on the ice and those kind of things, and oftentimes that talent's not replaced with equal or better until with maybe this next phase of adding. What is that like for your mentality going into the offseason? New coach coming in, fresh beginning, and an arc maybe ready to begin.
Yeah, I mean, I think the guys are excited. I think we obviously know where we're at. We had to, it's tough, right? There's, like you said, you lose big pieces to your room and a lot of good friends, but we stuck together and there's a lot to look forward to in the future here. And I think we have a big summer coming ahead, but all we can control is the work that we put in and the guys in the room that we put in and look for to have a great year next year. So we're all on board. We're all on the same page, and that's a big thing. And like I said, we're all excited.
And I think you guys are really well equipped to integrate a new face in to get them up to speed quickly on the culture that you guys have.
Oh, for sure.
How's that process take place?
Yeah, I mean, like I've said it from day one, this group is. It's something I haven't been a part of before. I mean, it's a special group, and that goes a long way, especially for people coming in or guys coming in that...
you are now with us.
Yeah, yeah, right. I mean, just like the guys, Carson, came in, and, the way that guys treated him, it's like he's been here all year, and that goes a long way, and it's something that we have to do. So it's kind of ingrained in us, and... we stick together, and so we're looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's an exciting time. What's the plan for the summer? Decompress.
Yeah. Take a few weeks here, decompress, and spend some time with family and friends haven't seen for a bit. So, a few trips here and there, and obviously training, skating, and doing all that good stuff, and getting ready, prepared for next year. So.
Mm. To do it all over again and go beyond 82.
Yeah, exactly. That's a goal. So yeah. we're looking forward to that challenge, and that would be great.
You're a guy in a playoff series that would be a severe pain in the ass. the way you play the game, in a 7-game series, like I see guys like you, and I go, that's a guy that's going to just build up scar tissue game after game, shift after shift in a playoff series.
I think we have a few guys like that, yeah, which is great. So yeah, I mean that's the goal, like I said. So
yeah, you and Garney would be a nightmare to deal with game in and game out. I hope you have a great summer.
Thank you.
And we'll be back here cranking it up sooner than we can even imagine. It happens fast. So thanks for everything this year. I really appreciate it and love our conversations. And enjoy the summer with family, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
There you go. Flyers defenseman Nick Seeler. As he dropped by for our conversation for the Flyers Exit Day interview series. Hope you guys enjoyed that, and I hope you have a great weekend. Enjoy the weekend. We'll be back Monday with Bill Meltzer, another couple of days closer to the NHL draft, which is sneaking up on us. By the way, Danny Briere will guest. The general manager, Daniel Briere, will be our guest on Flyers Daily next week as we inch closer to the NHL entry draft coming up for 2025 in no time. And the Flyers got a lot of skin in the game. So we'll have Bill on Monday. We'll talk about the draft and much more then. Join us on a brand new episode of Flyers Daily.